Blog Talk Radio.
Returning with us for another show is Jody Murphy. Before we get to Jody, I just want to advise we have a couple things coming up at Groomer Talk that I think you're going to enjoy. Wahl has donated two of its newest clippers, the Power Gripper. It's a corded, powerful clipper just being released, and we've got two of them to give away. We're going to go back to our pay it forward method. You can just come. It's very simple. Anytime during the month of March 2016, if you post on the board, you're automatically entered to win this contest. You just post on the board, and that's all you have to do. We will do our trivia questions that a lot of people like to play to win some bonus drawing tickets in this, but primarily just post on the board. If you should win, you'll get to keep one of these wall clippers for yourself. And you'll get to pay it forward, usually to a groomer in need or some pet or animal welfare rescue group, something that could really use this clipper for some good. So remember, that starts March 1, runs through the entire month. Just come and take part in the board. Our next show is going to be 2 weeks from today. We're going to have Greg Doctor of the Merrifield School in Florida. Greg will be, I think this will be his first time with us. He has a lot of interest in just running a great school. He helped a lot with getting creative grooming back on the okay with the state of Florida. Should be an interesting show. So let's get to Jody. I'll give her some introduction. Most of you probably know who Jody is. She is a four-time member of Groom Team USA and ranked one of the top groomers in the United States. She has multiple Best in Show and Best All-Around competitor credits to her career. She has an international medalist-winning gold and bronze medals in Barcelona, Spain in 2004, gold medal in Milan, Italy in 2007, competing among groomers from 13 countries. Today, she is a master pet stylist, certified with multiple certifying organizations. We also probably all know her for her incredible set of grooming DVDs. She has also won the Barclay Honors for her book, Dog Grooming Simplified. And if you haven't seen that, it's a beautiful, colorful book, really unique. Very different than any of the books we've seen before. Beautiful examples of dogs and guidance on grooming. And she's also come out with apparel, and you probably even, perhaps even wearing her apparel. So she's really done just an extreme amount for our industry, and it's always a pleasure to have us with her. And we'll let her talk about all these things more. So I'm going to open the lines, and I believe that I've got Jody here. Hello, Jody, is this you?
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, good to talk to you again. Let me do one thing to everyone. If you have a question for Jody, and we've had several emailed in to us, but if you're going to be listening to the call live and you have a question for her, what you'll do is hit 1, the number 1 on your telephone keypad. that sends a signal to me that your hand is up, in other words. And at the appropriate time, we'll start taking some calls from you. So just hold on after you hit the number one, and we'll connect you at the right moment. So, Jody, how's it going?
Well, it's going well. How about you?
Always busy. Always busy here. So it's kind of nice, you know. The season's coming up again. It's not that far away now. But during winter, there's a lot of groomers who groom a little bit less during winter, spends more on time. So that keeps us busy here. But I know, what are you going to be doing this year ahead coming up with the, it's not that far ahead before the trade show season starts.
Yeah, it's all about to start just in a few weeks from now, but I have a really busy next few months, actually. I've been doing a lot of private seminars here in Jersey the last few years. I've done 3-day events, and they've worked out really well, and we've had a great response, and the groomers tend to really enjoy it. I have a vendor that I invite on site, and it's just, I do 3 days with just me, and I'll have a guest speaker come in and help me out and give me a break in between topics. But I've been doing this the last few years, and it's been great. So I've taken it out of New Jersey now, and I'm actually headed to Virginia Beach, and I'm doing it with Danelle German. And I'll be doing 2 days with all dog grooming seminars, and Danelle will be doing 2 days with all of her cat grooming seminars. So that's coming up May 1st. We're going to be doing that May 1st through May 4th. And then after that, I'll be taking it to Dallas. I started grooming in Dallas. That's where I lived for several years, and that's where I started my career. And I still have several friends that live there that I still keep in touch with, and they really wanted me to come out there and do this out there. So I'll be doing that in the beginning of June. So, but in between all that, I'll be going to New Zealand and Australia in April. So that's going to be a huge trip. So really, once Atlanta Pet Fair starts in March, I'll be, really, really busy through June. So I've been busy working on seminars and, lining up dogs and all of that. So it's a little bit crazy right now, but it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy it, and the groomers tend to really like it, and I get to go to different cities where, some of these people can't get out to trade shows, and or some of the trade shows are too far away, so I'll be taking it on the road and going to different cities and doing these programs.
That sounds wonderful, and that's why we have you on early in the year, because I know it's pretty impossible. Although you will be... she'll be judging. A lot of you may know pretty quick we're going to be opening up the Rags to Riches contest, and Jody has been called back to be a judge again. We're going to do the same format as last year, where Melissa, Christina, and Jody will choose the top 10, and then you, the groomers, get to vote on that. So there's a lot of information on that on the board, and we'll be publishing it more there. I know you've gone to Australia before. Have you done the New Zealand on those other trips? I remember you went to Australia.
Yeah. No, I never did New Zealand.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to because I heard it's so beautiful there. And I actually had a groomers organization from New Zealand contact me to see if I wanted to come out. So I've done Australia twice already. So I contacted the people in Australia that I had invited me out there. Because they wanted me to come back again, and I was telling them that New Zealand wanted me to come out, so they actually got together, and they are kind of doing it together to help them, save on expenses and whatnot. So I'll be doing New Zealand first for a 3-day program, and then the following weekend I'll be headed over to Australia to do a 3-day program, or actually a 4-day program with them. I'll be doing for the first time in Australia, we'll be doing a full day of mobile grooming out there, which they've never had before. So so that should be fun. So, yeah, I get to go to both. So it'll be great. I absolutely love it out there. The groomers in Australia are just fabulous. And They're just so eager to learn, and they're such nice people, and I really enjoy going there, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be wonderful. I've been to New Zealand as well, and it's just stunning scenery, so you're going to have a great time. You'll love it. And
goodness.
Same thing, same friendliness, everything, yep.
Very friendly people.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, they are.
Well, what's been happening with Dog Grooming Simplified? Any updates on the book, and how's it going?
Oh, my God. Well, it's just really, it's just overwhelming, actually. And it has taken off just like wildfire, and it's been so very well respected, and I just can't be happier. I've had grooming schools, including Maryfield, that you were just talking about, that has taken on my book in their schools, which is just so rewarding for me. So I've got grooming schools all over the country, and Puerto Rico and Canada, and so that is in the Netherlands. So I've had a lot of schools take over the book, which is just great. And it's just been going great. I mean, I think that the groomers are really appreciating the full color photos of the dogs, so they can really see what they're supposed to look like, and they can see the depth of the coat and the patterns and how they're set. And it's just a whole different approach to learning, and I think that it's really gone over well, and I just couldn't be happier. It's just been phenomenal.
You know, it gets a fair amount of talk on our message board, and I know that if any groomers, if you haven't seen this book yet, you owe it. If you get to the trade show somehow, get a copy or get at least a look at it. But there's a lot of groomers that mention that it's just so beautiful, the dogs in it, because these are photos. These aren't line drawings. They are actual photos of beautiful dogs. But it's kind of like a book to also put on the coffee table. It's on the coffee table just to put.
I know. I can't tell you how many people told me that, you know.
Yeah.
Because it is beautiful.
Pretty fun.
I mean, the photography is just stunning, and the just the full color. I mean, everything about it, it's very unique. So, and that's what I wanted, you know. I mean, I just didn't want to put out another grooming book. I wanted it to be something special and something different. And you know, like I said in our last, when we did this radio show before, it was when my book was first coming out. And, you know, and I said it then, and I'll say it now, you know, that's how I taught myself how to groom, by looking, going to dog shows and seeing what the dogs are supposed to look like. And I, you know, had been mobile, you know, from the time I was only grooming for a year, so I didn't have anybody to help me at that point, and I really didn't have a mentor of any kind. So when I would go to these dog shows, I used to bring home, you know, the dogs, the review books, where, you know, they have all the top-winning dogs, and I used to keep those books in my van. And that's what I used to look at, because that's how I'm such a visual learner, and that's how I could just mimic those show dogs with these pet trims. So that's what I wanted in my book. I really wanted to do that because I knew how much it helped me. So that's where that all came from.
Mm-hmm. What's happening with the groomer apparel?
Well, it's doing well. I have a couple new patterns right now that I'm working on. One of them will be available in Atlanta. It's real cute, and it's a sleeveless top that's going to be available from extra small through 4X. And so I'm excited about that. And I have a new pattern that just came in just this past week, so that'll go into production also within the next probably month or so. So yeah, I'm trying to, you know, keep up. I can't seem to keep anything in stock. Everything seems to go so quickly, you know, which is good. But, and, you know, of course, I'm keeping the line here in the States, and that's always been a challenge. So, because so many of the companies are overseas, and I'm really trying to keep my line in the United States, because I really, the quality of my fabric, the quality of the sewing is really important to me. So, so that's my, that's, you know, something that I've I've always wanted to do. So, but it's a challenge because, you know, a lot of the other companies are overseas, and they can sell their apparel line for a lot less expensive than I can. But for me, it's just more important to keep it here and keep the quality. So that's what I've done.
Yeah, that's one thing that people, if you haven't seen Jody's wear, it's definitely got the quality fabrics and construction going on. I remember you were a stickler about that in the beginning. That was one of the great differences to make, and you stuck with that. You've gotten that reputation for that.
It's like whatever I do, you know, I do things that are important to me, and I do things for quality. And if it's not quality, why bother doing it, you know? So, the reason why I got into the apparel line in the first place was because, you know, no one really had anything out there. Once Rosie Lang stopped making apparel, you know, she was making apparel the whole time I was competing, and I only wore all of her things. And then when she went out of business, there was no one out there making apparel. And so that's the only reason why I started doing it. So, you know, so I wanted something that was stylish and fitting and that the quality was there. So I'm lucky enough to have this really great factory in New York City, and they do a great job. And so it's gone really well. So it's hard to get into their schedule a lot. So a lot of times when I'm running low, it's hard to get. They're so busy, so it's really hard to get my stuff going. So sometimes it takes me a little while to get things back in stock, but I'm kind of at their mercy, you know. So.
Now, for those of you that I didn't mention, that Jody, and if you don't know, she is a mobile groomer. Now, what with all this that you're doing, are you still mobile grooming?
No, actually, what happened was about 2 years ago, it was about a year before I finished my book, I was still working, you know, 4 days a week in my mobile, and I had worked on my book for probably about 3 years at that point, and I just felt like I was like, you know, you just burn the candle at both ends and trying to keep up with my mobile, trying to keep up with the DVDs and the clothing line and all this, and I just felt like I had to make a change in my life because I wanted to get my book finished, and I felt like I didn't have enough hours in the day. And I used to go out working in my mobile, and all that was on my mind was my book. And I used to write down notes while I was working, things that would come to my head, things that I wanted to put in there. And I finally got to the point where I thought, you know what, this is ridiculous because I'm just killing myself just trying to do everything. So I finally, there was a girl in town that that has a grooming shop, and I've known her for many, many years, and I was talking to her, and she said, you know, if you ever decide to not go mobile, you can bring your clients here and work in my shop. So I thought, you know what, maybe that's what I'll do. So I know a lot of the mobile groomers in town, and there was a couple of them that I referred out a lot of my clients that needed to stay mobile for one reason or the other. So I gave a lot of my clients to a couple of the other mobiles, and the rest of my clientele comes to me, and I work at the shop 1 day a week. And it works out great for me because it's once a week I can, you know, I was able to finish my book. And that last year that I did this, I was able to really sit down and finish it and get it out there. So it was really the best thing that I did at that point. Although I have to say I absolutely miss mobile grooming, and everything that I've ever said about mobile grooming versus shop grooming is so true. And even though my clients are coming to me now, I still get those occasional ones where they cancel if the weather's bad. And they never did that before because I was always going to them, right? So now I find that, you know, I get those cancellations that I never got before. It's a little different. It's very different from what I've used to because I've been mobile for 18 years. That's all I ever knew. So even though it works great for my, you know, for me and my lifestyle right now, I still absolutely miss the mobile for sure. But my clients are very happy, and they come to me. I give them a schedule time, just like they did when we were mobile. So they're in and out. I take them by appointment, and I have a bather that bathes for me, which is nice. I never had that before, so now I can get, you know, about 10 dogs done in a day and you know, still get through it in one day a week. So it works out good, but I had to make that change. It was just too hard.
That's understandable. You know what? I was, along with my coordinator, we like to Google out the whole grooming industry every day and see what we can come up with. And we there popped out McKenzie with a beautiful Marilyn Meloz as a groomer. And it was a picture of the Gawker groom.
Yeah.
That was great. Beautiful groom. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your daughter for those that don't know some of that connection there.
Well, she's doing really good. I mean, she jumped into the contest ring and made it up to the A division after her first year out there. And she's just one of those people that is just a natural, you know. And I'm not saying that just because she's my daughter, but she just really surprised me, you know, because she's a very artsy person. She was always wanted to be an artist. You know, do something in art. She actually did all my skeletal drawings in my book and everything, and she's very talented, and I think that is what gives her that edge in grooming. She's just very artsy. But, you know, it's funny because when she was young and I was mobile, she never had any desire to want to groom dogs, never even thought about it. And she used to come with me in the van when she was about 10. She used to come with me in the summer and, you know, when she wasn't in school, and she would help me bathe and dry, and she got to be really good at it. But she never even wanted to cut nails. She never wanted to do anything, never even asked me to do anything. And then she was getting ready. She graduated high school, and she was getting ready to go off. She was going to art school in Cincinnati. And so I said to her, you know, why don't you just get a part-time job as a bather? You're so good at it. You don't have to learn anything, you know. Do that just for extra money. So that's what she did. So she went and got a job as a bather. And, of course, as soon as she got in there, the place that she was working said, well, we're going to teach you how to groom. So she called me up and she said, well, they want to teach me how to groom. And I was like, oh, my God, are you kidding me? You know, all the years you were working with me, you never wanted to groom. So anyway, so she started grooming, and she would come home and she would from school, and she would come out and help me. I would groom half the dog, she would groom the other half. And I'll tell you, I mean, we groomed so much alike, it was really scary. I mean, I would not even have to even touch her work, and both of the sides of the dog would look the same. It was just really scary, and her techniques were good, and she just, you know, I would just see what she was learning and make sure she was learning the right thing and teaching her finisher work and everything. And so she just kind of built on that. Every time she'd come home, she'd come out and work with me again. And then she got a job with Carla Addington Smith in Cincinnati. I don't know if you know who she is.
She's actually a Groomerized blogger with us. Yeah.
Yeah. So Carla has been around for quite a while. She was one of the original groom team members, and she's a great person. And McKenzie started working for her, and Carla started working with her. And Carla had some nice dogs, and she had Bedlingtons, and she had poodles, and so McKenzie started learning the profiles with Carla. And then she'd come home, and I used to set up my grooming table in the kitchen. And this was when she was about, I'm thinking about 18, something like that, 18, 19. And I would set up the table in my kitchen, and she'd get my little mini up on the table story. And she would, you know, I would teach her how to set the angles, and I would teach her how to, you know, set the profile. And she really was thinking about competing, but her head wasn't there yet. She was still too busy partying with her friends and whatnot. And so, you know, plus I think she was under a lot of pressure because it was me, and she did not want to go in the ring until she was really ready. So she just kind of, when she was ready, when she really felt like she could win, that's when she went out. And she just really surprised me. She just did a really great job, and she's so driven, and she is constantly, you know, working with readers and going for extra lessons and really fine-tuning what she's doing. And she's just one of those people that you can tell her once and she'll get it. You know, she's just really good that way. So she's been doing fabulous.
That's great to hear. Proud mother and well-deserved.
Yeah,
you know, grooming's in our family, too. It's our 56th year in grooming in our family. So I understand it's great to see it will continue on in your family. You know,
yeah.
I'm going to go ahead. Well, let's go ahead, because you got quite a few email questions. I want to take some. Again, if anyone has just come in, if you have a question for Jody, you can press 1 on your keypad. That'll send a signal to us. Put your hand up here, and we'll get to you. But we've had quite a few. Let's start over here. We have Cindy in Virginia asked about, she has a smooth-coated mixed-breed dog with several big hair licks along her back. Do you have any suggestions how to make them look less obvious?
Like a cowlick? Does she mean like the cowlick?
I think she mean like cowlick is probably what she meant by that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard on the short-coated breeds because it's the way that the hair grows out of the follicle, and there's really not a lot you can do about it when it's a short coat like that. You know, on your longer coats, you know, a lot of times, you know, like your Maltipoos and things like that, they'll have cowlicks on the top of their heads or, you know, things like that, where you can work out the cowlick when you're drying the dog and get it to lay the way you want it. But when it's a short coat like that, it's really, there's really not a lot you can do about it, unfortunately. You know, you could card over the coat with a stripping knife and try to get as much of the dead coat out so it lays nice, so it's not swirling up. But as far as making it less obvious, it's really tough when it's a short coat like that.
Okay. Cindy, that's your answer. We're going to move on to the next one. Enid in Pennsylvania, she asked about, for health reasons, I'm going to have to sit a lot more when grooming. Any suggestions to make that easier? Apparently she's tried it and is having some problems.
Well, you know, the one thing about sitting, I sit when I'm drying. If I have to dry the dog, I'll sit. But I actually, when you sit and groom, and I know a lot of people do sit and groom, but when you do that, you have to move the dogs around to get to the areas that you need to groom to. And a lot of the dogs do better if they just stand in one position and you walk around them. So if you have to constantly move the dog to get to the areas that you need to groom, that could be distracting on some dogs. Some dogs it might not bother at all, but others could get upset by that. And they never kind of settle in and settle down and let you do what you need to do. So that could cause a little bit of a problem, but if that's what you have to do, that's what you have to do. And I think what you really need to do is get a nice stool that's ergonomically designed for you. You don't want to just get any kind of stool or any kind of chair. So they have some really nice stools out there that are kind of like a saddle type of stool, you know what I mean, by that saddle.
Right.
Chair, so it, the way that you sit in it, it supports your back, and it they're more comfortable. I have one at the shop, and I sit in it when I'm drying, and it's very comfortable. So, I mean, if that's what you have to do, I would just say, you know, at least try to groom one half of the dog completely and then turn it so you don't have to constantly turn. You know, the more you move a dog and adjust the dog, the more that the harder it is to get them to settle in and stand still for you. So keep that in mind while you're sitting.
I suspect this, Enid, might be part of, we got a message posted today on the board about a groomer that's also having to start sitting a lot because her neuropathy in her feet and legs is getting worse, and sitting doesn't cure all that, but it helped, apparently, this groomer. And what I was thinking, you know, especially if perhaps this groomer isn't using a hydraulic table to go to that, because at least when they're sitting, some groomers like to have a little bit of that view sometimes, sort of looking down, whereas, yeah, you know, at the pet and what, and put a pattern on or something like that. So if not using a hydraulic table, and I suppose even when you think about it, there's chairs and then there's stools, like you're saying, and
yeah,
stools will give,
yeah,
her a little bit of lift to have that view. So Enid, that may be you that's on the message board, so we'll get those Jody's answer to you, and to keep checking on the board, because I know there were people giving some suggestions on the board as well, if that's you.
Well,
so moving along. Yes?
For the little dogs, you know, they've got those Lazy Susan little tabletops that spin around also, you know, so on the smaller dogs, you don't have to turn them so much if you had something like that to put them on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Leona in California. Now, she was asking about your mobile grooming career. What did you do as a mobile groomer, Jody, when you got to a customer's house, and the dog was in bad condition, and you know you didn't have enough time allotted to deal with that, thinking about the schedule the rest of the day, it's going to put you off if this suddenly needs 30 extra minutes or whatever to do that groom. Oh, anything to recover on the schedule for
the
day?
Well, you know, that's a big problem with mobile grooming. You know, that's one of the biggest dilemmas. It's not like a shop where a dog walks in and if they're in bad condition, you say, okay, well, we'll see you at 5 o'clock. You know, it's like, you know, you have to do that dog within the time frame that you allowed yourself. So this is where, you know, what comes into play here is when you make that appointment. If this is a new client, especially, you have to ask a lot of questions. Because there's a lot of ways to eliminate that problem. And, you know, and I'm sure everyone, including myself, has been in that situation. And unfortunately, you learn from your mistakes on how to handle that. So, you know, one of the biggest things that you have to do is ask the right questions. So what you want to do is that when they call you, the first thing you want to ask them is, how often does your dog get groomed? When was it groomed last? Now, that's like the key question. When was your dog groomed last? And if they say, well, let's see, then you know it was like a long time ago. you can always tell by their tone of voice. So, but if they say, oh, every 4 weeks, and, you know, she was just done last month or whatever, then you know that the dog is probably in good condition. But you can tell by the way that they answer that question when the dog was done last. And you really have to think about the breed also, because if, say, a Cocker Spaniel or a Wheaton or an Old English Sheepdog, those dogs that you know mat very easily, and now you're not really sure the condition that the dog is in, you want to allow yourself more time. Always for your first visit, you always want to allow yourself time, because you just don't know how the dog is going to be. You don't know the behavior. You don't know the condition. You know, people can tell you, oh, the dog loves grooming. Oh, the dog, you know, we get groomed every 4 weeks. But you don't know until you get there. So you need to allow yourself more time than normal to do that dog, because chances are you're going to be resetting a pattern. Okay, if the first time you've ever touched the dog, you don't know the pattern that the dog is in. So that is time consuming also. So, so besides that, if it's a new customer, I always tend to make it my last appointment, because this way you won't have that problem. If you do it in the middle of the day and that does happen, what you need to do is really think about your clients from that appointment through the rest of the day. All of my clients, I would say probably 95% of my clients, I had access to their house. So I either had an alarm code, I had keys, I could get to the dogs whenever I needed to. And most of the time, the people were never home. So if that was the case and you went to this house and the dog was going to be in bad condition, I would look at my book and say, okay, who do I have next? Can I just go whenever? Are they going to be home? Do I have a key to get in? Because if that's the case, then you could just call them and say, I'm running a little bit late, but I'll be there, you know, within a certain amount of time. But if it's somebody that is waiting for you and you have to be there at a certain time and you know that, then that's when you have to really think about what you want to do here. So you can either reschedule this appointment or you can quickly call that next client and say, is it okay if I'm running behind, you know, and see if that's going to work first. But if it's going to affect the rest of your day, you probably need to either, you know, reschedule it if your clients are not flexible. So, but the key here is to really make those new dogs that you're taking on your last appointment if possible. And if not, just allow yourself more time for the first visit. Because that happens to everybody. Trust me, it happens to everybody. And I had to cancel my last appointment because a dog took me so long that it was so late that I just had to cancel, reschedule my last appointment. And I used to hate doing that, but sometimes that happens. So, if you can, make it your last appointment of the day, and then you're not stressed about it, and you can take your time and do what you need to do.
Great. That's a good answer. It got me thinking about, you know, if you have actually blocked out time for lunch and it's in the morning, where I go, well, you know, maybe I'll do it now and I've lost my lunch. But, and, you know, there's a lot of groomers that really skip lunch. It's, you know, or do this 5-minute, 10-minute kind of lunch thing. How did you deal with, you know, fueling up again during the day? Did you really block out time for your lunches and take it?
No, not really. No, I mean
there's
I
a lot of groomers like that.
Yeah, I would just eat on the run kind of thing. And a lot of times I didn't. I'm not really big on eating lunch anyway. So I, you know, always had water and things like that. But I found that if I ate lunch, it would slow me down. I would get so tired that I just wanted to go home, you know. And even now, I mean, I find that if I eat during the day, it just slows me down. So, but I know everybody's different. It's probably not the best thing to do, but... once in a while, you know, you get an appointment that isn't home or whatever, and they forgot you were coming, and you can't reschedule anybody. You look at your day, the rest of the day, okay, who can I bump up so I can, I don't have this, like, hour to kill. And sometimes it just doesn't work out, and you have an hour to kill. So then you can go and, you know, have lunch or go shopping or, you know, do what you have to do. Right. So sometimes that works out. But as a rule, I never really took extra time. I just would kind of, if I just eat on the run if I had to, if I needed to. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Even when I worked as a bather and assistant for a long time, I can't tell you how many times I knew how to eat my fast food and stretch dry at the same time. I just wanted to keep on going.
No, that's right. Yeah. You do. You know, when you're on a time clock, you know, you need to be there in a timely manner. You know, I have a lot of clients that used to just make me like a brown bag to go because they knew that I would never eat during the day, and they used to make me lunch and give it to me in a brown bag. mobile clients are really very different than shop clients. They're just really, really great that way. So,
did any of them offer you lunch or something?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I swear that they thought that their dog was the only one I was grooming all day. You know, because they say, "Oh, come on in, you want to have some coffee?" Or you know. You know,
exactly.
Stuff like that. So they think you have nowhere else to go. So
I understand. I know if you came to our house, my mother, I don't care who you are, the serviceman, whatever, the postman, you want to come in, can I get you something? And she'd do it. I mean, I don't care. So
that's the same thing.
Come on, I'll make you something. I'll bring it out.
That's what they do. Yeah. They do that. Yeah. They do. They're great that way.
Okay, let's move on. Leona, you got your answer there. Good question. How about Avery in New Mexico? Avery has a poodle with very short legs, but the customer wants a pattern groom like a Royal Dutch. and she thinks it's going to look really odd. Is there any way to, I guess she's trying to say, to give some height or something to do, to, you know, give it more of a poodle look, even though it's got those short little legs?
Yeah, yeah, because if you take the hair off, like around the neck and over that shoulder blade there, it just makes the legs look shorter, I know. So really all you can do is just kind of explain to them that it'll really make her look even shorter in leg, and if maybe try something different, like a pattern around the waist or a different kind of pattern that won't take away from the length of legs, you know, offer. That's why it's always great to have, Shirley Calzone's little book. I think it's just a fabulous book. And you know, it's always great to have pictures to show to your clients. And that's the other good thing about my book, too, is because it's such a visual. People love to see, you know, their breed or whatever. And so if you bring in, say, Shirley's book and you show them the different patterns, different things that you could do, do that. Because sometimes people don't have a vision of what things are going to look like. You know, so if you kind of explain it to them that way and show them different, give them different options, what you think would look better, you know.
Right. Our next question came from Olivia, and I think we sort of answered it, but because she was inquiring about your daughter and how, you know, I guess it's kind of fun to have a daughter become a groomer too, and she just was asking about if you really had an instinct that she might become a champion groomer. Or how early of an age did you really see that she was probably going to have a big interest in grooming? I think you've kind of answered, but anything more you want to say about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, she really started bathing for me when she was about 10, and she liked it, but she really didn't show any interest. But I'll tell you what, once she stepped in the contest ring for the first time, that's all it took. Then I knew at that point that she was headed somewhere, you know. So she got sucked in just like all of us, you know. So.
Yeah. So it's not all genetics, but there are some genetics probably going on there too. She picked up some mom's talent. That's great.
But I used to get so stressed when I was competing, and I was just very serious and, you know, I just really worked really hard for it. Where she's very she's very humble, you know. When she comes out of the ring, if she doesn't place, then I'll say to her, well, you know, what happened? And she'll say, oh, well, I know what I did. I didn't do this or I didn't do that. You know, she'll never, ever come out of the ring and say, oh, I should have won that class. You know, never have I ever. You know, she's so good about where she places and how she's done it. She's very in tune to, you know, what she needs to do better, and she's like that. So
cool. Okay, we have a question from Tina in Tennessee. What do you do for dogs with bad tear stains, and any remedies you suggest?
Well, I know that's always a huge topic, but, you know, the thing about tear stains is, first of all, you have to try to figure out what the root of the problem is. And, you know, whenever clients of mine have a lot of staining, like ridiculous amount of staining, I'll, you know, ask them what they're feeding the dog, number one, and what kind of treats they're giving the dog, because the one thing that I have found is that anything with red dye in it, like any kind of food that has, like, you know, Beneful with all the colors and, you know, pepperoni and sausages and all that stuff with red dye, that causes staining. So the first thing that I try to find out is what they're feeding and what they're feeding in treats. So once you rule that out, if they're on a good food, if they're giving, you know, decent treats, and you know that there's not a lot of the chemicals and dyes and stuff that they're giving the dog, you know, you want to look at, I know that they say that plastic bowls can contribute to staining, you know, secondhand smoke, I've heard a big topic about that can contribute to staining. there's a lot of things that could be medically wrong with the dog that the client doesn't even know, like blocked tear ducts or, you know, ingrown eyelashes. Then there's entropion, which is the inverted eyelids. So there's things that could be going on with the eye that the client doesn't even know about. So they really need to let the vet take a look and make sure there's no lashes in there that are ingrown, that are causing irritation, which is causing a lot of tearing, which is the tearing is causing the staining. So so there are things that you need to figure out first. You know, giving them filtered water is always a good step. It can't hurt. There's a lot of, on tap water, there's a lot of mineral content, and there's, you know, iron and other, you know, impurities, there's chlorine, fluoride, so all those things can really cause staining as well. So giving them filtered water is a good step. So once you, you know, figure all of that out, you know, hopefully you'll come down to, you know, what the problem is. You know, a lot of the products on the market, you know, have the low-dose antibiotic in them, so you don't really want to go that route anymore. So, you know, all you can do is do your best with trying to, you know, rule things out that are causing the problem. I did hear that giving yogurt, you know, once or twice a day could help, too, with the staining. It kind of neutralizes the acids and the tears. So I don't know how helpful that is. But, you know, it's best to try to just narrow down to what the root of the problem is first. And to keep the eyes clean, you know, a lot of the clients, they don't clean the eyes, and then, you know, they're constantly building up and building up and building up, and it's causing massive staining, where if they would just wipe the eyes every day and keep the area clean, it will prevent a lot of the staining, you know, because the staining is caused by the tears staying on the hair like that. So they can really eliminate a lot of that. And you can even put a little Vaseline under the eyes to prevent the tears from clinging. I do that with my little poodle because he tends to get a little bit of staining, especially when he's growing out, because Mackenzie uses him in the contest ring. So when she's growing him out and his face is getting long, he'll tend to stain. So I have to put a little bit of Vaseline on a Q-tip and keep it under his eye, and then that kind of wicks the tears off so it doesn't stain so much. So yeah, it's a problem for a lot of people. But, you know, a lot of your clients, they want to try to figure out how to get rid of the problem, but they don't want to put the effort into making changes. So all you can do is educate them and have them try different things, but it's up to them ultimately.
You know, Jody, this past week we had a post with photographs put up on the board. And this might appeal to those of you that are open to alternative health care. Some people know of colloidal silver. It's
right.
Pretty safe stuff, actually, and all. But she actually didn't want to keep doing the antibiotics. So if the dog was improving with an antibiotic, she said, okay, I'm going to try colloidal silver. And she did before and after photographs, and it was pretty stunning. Interesting post.
Yeah, the colloidal silver will help keep the area clean under the eye, and it's got antimicrobial values, so it will prevent, because a lot of times, you know, when tear staining is like a rust color, that's the stain, but when it gets real black and dark, that's where it's starting to cause yeast problems under the eyes. And so the colloidal silver is supposed to really help prevent all that and to keep it clean. And you can get that at any health food store. So that's definitely something. And also milk thistle is something else that they say works well too. So,
and that's probably why as well with that the yogurt would work for those pets, because the probiotics in there can go after some
right.
of that bacterial
right.
issues. So, yeah.
Right, and the dogs love yogurt. So, I mean, that's easy.
Yeah.
Just a little teaspoon every day and see if that works too.
Yes. My father was a pretty well-known surgeon, actually, and I, as a kid, we he believed in. We're going back, what, to the 50s, and he was every day, everyone in the family eats really good yogurt for the probiotics. All the way back in the 50s, he was
really
doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whether you like it or you open up and take it.
And they even say, really, when dogs are on antibiotics, too, is when dogs have gastrointestinal issues, to give them yogurt for that same reason, too.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, Tina, there's a lot of answer for you. Let's move on to Eddie in Pennsylvania. Who did you learn grooming from, and who made the most influence in your grooming career, Jody? And why did you choose mobile? So,
well,
why don't you go ahead.
Well, you know, when I first started, I started as a bather. And this was many, many years ago when I was in Dallas, and I started calling around to see where I could learn how to groom, because at the time I had two Cocker Spaniels. And I moved to Dallas. My husband was transferred there. And so in New Jersey, I had the same groomer their whole lives. And so when I moved out to Dallas and I was trying to get them groomed, I was having just one horrible experience after the other. And I had three young kids. My kids were probably kindergarten, third, fourth grade, something like all three of them. And so the last thing I cared about was, you know, whether my dogs got shaved or not, because I just wanted them clean. I didn't care really what they looked like. I was too busy with kids, you know, so I was like the easiest person to please when it came to my dogs. Well, I went out there, and I mean, the experiences that I was having were just horrible. And I did this for a year, going from shop to shop, thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do with these dogs? This is horrible. So I figured, you know, I'm just going to, you know, do this myself. So I started looking around. There weren't really any schools. There was one school there, but it was full-time, and I really couldn't do that with three kids. So I decided I called PetSmart, because this is when PetSmart first opened. They were, like, brand new. And I called them to see where their groomers went to learn how to groom, and they said, well, you know, we can teach you how to groom. You just have to be a bather for us for a year. So I thought, okay, well, I'll do that. So I went in, and I was a bather for them on Saturdays for a year. And then they started just sending me to their they had a store that they did their apprentice program. So they sent me there. And I was really fortunate, because the store that I went to, the guy that was training, he was an all-breed handler. And he, not that I learned a lot, because it was a very short period, but what he taught me, he gave me a really solid foundation, and he got me off to a good start, and he was a really great teacher. But after, I had to work for them for a year, and so I did. And then I went to my first trade show in Pasadena, and I saw all these mobile grooming vans outside, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's what I have to do. Because at the time, I could really only work on Saturdays, and what was happening is my kids were getting older. They were all involved in soccer. I was like, you know, Saturdays was their soccer games, and so I was missing a lot because I was grooming. And so when I went to the show and I saw these vans, I thought, you know, this is what I need to do. So I ordered my van right there at the show. I was only grooming a year, and I was mobile ever since. And I did it because of my kids, because I needed to be there for them, and I needed to have my own schedule and work it around their school and their activities. So that's why I went mobile, and I loved every minute of it, and I have no regrets, and it was the best thing I ever did. And but what happened was, because I was only grooming a year and I really didn't have any knowledge in any kind of breed trims or anything, I had to really seek out the knowledge. So I would go to dog shows, like I said before. Anytime there was a local dog show, I would go to see what these dogs should look like. And then I started going to trade shows by myself, because I didn't know anybody. And I would go to these trade shows, and I remember seeing the competition going on in the ring and thinking, oh, I would love to do that one day. So so anyway, I don't know how, but I think my one Cocker Spaniel passed away, and so we decided to get a puppy. So I was at a dog show, and I met these breeders, and they had puppies, and I was talking to them for a while, and they said, you know, I said, you know, I would love to learn how to groom these dogs for show. And so they said, oh, we'll help you. And I joined their club, and they helped me. They taught me how to groom these cockers for show. And that's how I got into cockers, and that's how I learned to show groom. And so I started working with them, and I waited until I was ready, and then I knew I could win, and then I started competing. And I won very quickly, just like Mackenzie with my cockers. I got moved up very quickly. So, but, you know, while I was at these trade shows, I met Chris Pulaski, and I was just so mesmerized by her. And she was just, she used to just draw me in, just her mannerisms, her knowledge, everything about her. And so every time I would go to these shows, I would just seek her out. And I would just watch every seminar she ever did. I would watch every demo she ever did. And then when I started competing, I used to bring my dogs to her and for critiques. And so I have to say that she would be the person that I learned the most from. She's the really one of a kind, and she's so knowledgeable, and she's so sweet, and she just taught me so much over the years. And even when I was, when I got moved up, when I had that little cocker, and he didn't have the greatest confirmation, and but he was good for the lower levels, and I used to bring him, when I got moved up to the A division, and I was trying to compete with him, and I wasn't winning anymore, because now I was in there with the big guns. And so I remember going to her, and I, you know, this one time I knew I did a really good job on him. I thought he looked beautiful, and I just couldn't understand why I didn't place. But I brought him over to her, and she said to me, you know what? It's all about the dog now. You put this trim on a better dog, and you're going to start winning. And so that's what I did. I started getting better dogs, and that's when I started winning. So your confirmation of your dog is so important, especially when you get to the upper levels, you know. But Chris was just, she was my mentor, and she still is. I still look up to her. She's a fabulous person.
Great. Thanks. Oh, boy. You're just going down memory lane here, and you talk sometimes about your past and how we all got into grooming. One thing you never really plan when you start life here often. My son's going to be a doctor. No, we're going to go into grooming. What are you talking about? About, you know, lawyer, doctor, no, groomer.
I know. People,
whatever, you know, you never know. But it becomes a passion working with the dog. That's all there is.
Yeah. It does. It does. I think I was 30 when I started grooming. So it was later in life, you know.
Yeah.
So, sometimes you don't know what you want to be when you grow up until you're an adult.
Right. You know, actually, I did work just to tell people, because, you know, a lot of times in our seminars, I would ask, when I gave them at schools, they'd say, come in and give them a few days of business side training for, I want to add that to my curriculum. And I said, great. And I would ask them, I'd say, how many people snickered at you or outright laughed at you or said, oh, my God, when you said you're going to go into grooming? And about 60-70% at what, this would be in the 90s when I was doing that, would raise their hand, and they had, like, what are you thinking about? You're going to go to college and be whatever. It's usually some sort of professional. And actually, they followed their joy, and most of them kept with it. But it was interesting. In my legal career, when I left sort of the family for a while, and I was offered great jobs and worked with lawyers and in these big, illustrious firms, three of them for a while. Then I came back to the family business. But it was ironic for me to watch. They call them law clerks. You're just out of law school, and you're just called a law clerk, and you come in to get some experience. And, you know, I can see unhappiness on someone's face if you're really looking at somebody. And there were, I would say, 80% of those law clerks were told from a child, they're not going to do what they want to do. You're going to be a lawyer. You're going to be the better professional. And it was so fun, because sometimes we'd go out at night, because these are in the big cities where we were working. And I would see them just rocking out. They're just wild. They're this conservative, you know, young person trying to get this career. And he knew that isn't what they wanted to do. So
Yeah.
And some of them, you know, you never know. It's great. And so sometimes there are groomers not getting into this to around 30. I think they needed to go out
yeah.
and say, hey, you know, this regular world, it's not for me.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what I love, and I want to work with dogs, you know, or cats.
Yeah. You would really be shocked. I get emails regularly with people that are coming from the corporate world that want to learn how to groom dogs, and they buy my whole series, and they're tired of corporate. And so I've had people that are in their 60s that want to learn how to groom dogs. You know, you would really be surprised how many people turn to dog grooming after they've had huge careers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we get some of them, especially around the 50s, saying, am I too old on the message board? Am I too old grooming? And no, that's the wonderful thing. Just
yeah.
focus your career on the smaller breeds and whatever you can
yeah.
physically handle. You don't have to do the huge pets and all. Grooming is so flexible there. It's just, you know, great that
yeah.
it can accommodate so many people. And the pets are lucky for it, because those are usually the people that are going to be good and kind groomers to these animals.
Right.
When it's your passion, you'll do better. Okay, we better
yeah.
move to Newbie in Hawaii. So I don't know who you are, Newbie, but here's your question. And you didn't have to say it's dumb. There's no dumb questions when you're learning here. So maybe it's a he, still gets confused when I should use blending shears versus thinning shears.
That's like one of my biggest pet peeves, I swear, because, you know, it started out, and I actually think Oster started the trend. Sorry, Chris, but,
uh-huh.
you know, so Oster started calling them blenders. And once they started doing that, it just threw everybody in a tailspin, because now everybody's trying to figure out what a blender is and what a thinning shear is. And it, to me, they're all thinning shears. But, you know, they started saying, well, you know, a blender is a shear that has teeth on one side and blade on the other, and a thinning shear has teeth on both sides. And, you know, and that really is, it's just really a bad move for our industry, I think, because it's really confusing groomers, and not just him or her, but everybody. I mean, I constantly, every seminar I do, I get that question. So what you have to remember is that they are all thinning shears to me. I always refer them to thinning shears. And, you know, any shear will blend a certain coat type. You know, I have my line of four shears that I designed. And I designed four shears because each one of those shears does something different. And each one of those shears will work on a certain coat type or certain coat types. So my, you know, say my outliner, it will not blend, you know, a Yorkie coat, but it will blend, you know, a Portuguese water dog coat beautifully. So you see what I'm saying is that any shear will blend a certain coat. Okay, so you just have to know your shears and know what you're looking for, and don't get hung up on the blender thinning shear thing, because it's just a name. That's all it is. They're all thinning shears to me, and I always refer to them as thinning shears. And you just have to find the right shear that's going to blend the coat type that you're working on. I hope that makes sense.
Yep, it does. It does. I tell you, you're absolutely right. That's where it started. I forgot about that.
It did.
Very interesting. Yeah.
And people are forever asking me that. Everywhere I go, it's really, really confused a lot of people. So,
cool. Okay, Newbie. Good luck with your career and keep asking questions. Sammy in Florida, did you ever think of opening a school, Jody?
You know what? It might have crossed my mind, you know, here and there, but because of you know, my lifestyle and my business and the traveling, it just wouldn't work for me. You know, I would have loved to do that, and I've been approached by several different schools to attend their programs over the years. And it's just, you know, I designed my DVD series because I felt that, you know, a lot of the grooming schools out there are, are not teaching to the extent that they need to be teaching at. And so I designed my DVD series so somebody could, you know, learn how to groom. And everything that they ever would need to know is in this series, from techniques to co-preparation to medical issues to handling techniques. Everything that you would need to know is in my series. And I did that because I love to teach, but for me to open a school and have to be committed to being there all the time, it would never fit into what I do right now. So I just couldn't do it. Although with that being said, I have a lot of people that come to me for private lessons, and I have taught a couple people from start, people that I know that were pet sitters that wanted to learn how to groom, and I've taught them. But it's tough. It's tough teaching from the ground up. It's not easy. And, I prefer, doing the advanced teaching and the advanced skills, and it just comes more natural for me. So, but yeah, I mean, I've always, I love teaching, but for me to open a school, I've never really given it that much thought. It has crossed my mind, but no, it's not really for me.
I think you, among some of the other champion groomers, have done one of the greatest services. I mean, it wasn't that long ago when we didn't have any DVDs or streaming out there, and
yeah.
A school can only do so much in 300 hours or so. That, I mean,
yeah.
And we used to always believe 600 hours. So you've actually, I think, have tremendously helped the training aspect and given a break to the schools. I mean, because I know there are some schools that will recommend your DVDs on, and then they can keep watching and always have it sitting there. So you've done a lot for education already.
And they're giving them
the groundwork.
Right, and I can tell you that everywhere that I go, every show that I attend, I have at least a handful of people come to my booth and say, "Oh my God, I've watched all your DVDs in my school." And every time I say, "Oh, what school would you go to?" It's always a school I've never heard about, a school that I didn't even know that had my DVDs,
Uh-huh.
So the schools are, especially in California, when I go to Groom West out there, oh my gosh, I think every school in California uses my DVDs. But it's great. I'm glad that they're utilizing them. And it's great that, before I started DVDs, when I was competing, I was working for Andis, and I was an Andis consultant. And I would be doing demos and people would come up to me and ask me questions and things, and I just couldn't believe that some of the questions that I was being asked. They're so basic, and I thought, my gosh, the knowledge, there's no knowledge out here. The education is so limited for these people, and the reason why I wanted to do these DVDs because of the lack of education that I was seeing at trade shows, So that's what prompted me to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. And you've got enough to do. I don't think you need to do a school. You've got your hands are full right now, and just keep the DVDs available for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to keep on growing, because with this pet style, I just call it the Alliance, the Pet Stylist Alliance, we're getting closer and closer to standardizing the initial education today.
Right.
It's great to see that's moving forward now. And
Yeah. You
have product as well as some of the others, Jane, Sue, and others, and Melissa, that are, it's kind of funny, I still have people buying my mother's book, 30 years later, whatever, and now I'm doing the new version of it. But we did these things early on, but as we get older and older, and this suddenly we get more standardized education agreed upon in our industry, these products are going to fill in the void of what could be a void if suddenly we had to sit down and say, okay, now let's get this education going. No, there's good training already available, and also great future ahead for people that are coming in compared to what it was like to start in the past.
Right.
With so few resources. I've got one more question for you because we're already way past our hour here.
Okay.
No problem. Lydia in New York asked, did you ever groom a dog in your mobile that acted claustrophobic? I did, and as soon as it got outside the van, it was sweet and calm and was never going to go back into that van. Did that ever happen to you?
No, not really.
That's kind of odd, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, unless what might have been happening is the dog was thinking that, you know, it was going in the car and that the stranger was going to take it away, you know?
Yeah.
And it was home, and it was anxious because it wanted to get back inside. You know, that's all I can think of. I've never had that really happen that I can recall, but I would imagine that that might be what the dog was thinking, you know. But
yeah,
I would think that after you go there several times, the dog would get into the routine, you know, and realize that, you know, it's home and it's going to stay home and you're going to bring it back in. So sometimes it takes dogs a couple of times before they understand what's happening. You know, it's funny because my clients will tell me that they can't even say my name because the dog will just wait at the door for me all day, you know. And it's like, you know, and they open the door and the dog goes flying out to my truck, can't wait to get in. And, you know. So, you know, they are creatures that have it. And so it may take a couple times for them to get it. But, yeah, that's kind of odd.
Yeah, I think you may be right, not claustrophobia, but that fear. I have two rescues, and both of them were abandoned from a car. And then I have our other dogs who love the car. They hear the car key, we're going for a ride with you. But these two will not. They hear the car keys, they hide. And I said, no, I won't do that to you. Their stomachs start to gurgling. I can hear it, and they throw up. And I think they remember the abandonment. And it's like love is, oh, God, he didn't take us. He didn't make us get in the car. And they're just so happy. I can hear their little brain going around. So never know.
Yeah.
I noticed that the could be. All right.
Yeah.
Jody, let's tell everyone how to find out all the things that you're doing, where to go to your website, and
My website is
for the recording.
Yeah, my website is jodymurphy.net, and that's Jody with an I. And I have a news and events page that I have all the upcoming events of where I'm going to be this year. I also have registration available on my website for the Virginia Beach Retreat, which is May 1st through 4th, and you can sign up for one day or 2 days with me, 2 days for Danelle, or the whole 4 days, whatever you want. So that's at the DoubleTree Hotel in Virginia Beach. That's going to be really great. We have Frank Rowe and Son, who's going to be our vendor on site for all your grooming needs. So that we're excited about that. And then the Dallas seminar will be June 5th and 6th at the Weston Galleria, and we'll have a vendor there also, King Scott, which is Groom Depot in Dallas. There are general vendors will be there. So both of those events, you can register on my website. All the information is there. We're working on all the programs. We'll have a lot of different. It's all breeds. We're going to do mostly all demos, all different breeds, mixed breeds, techniques. So it'll be both of those events will be jam-packed with learning. We have a lot of companies, Wall, Oster, Andes, Barn Elbows. They're all going to be donating products and clippers and whatnot. We always give door prizes all throughout the weekend, so everybody has a chance of winning something. We have a great turnout, and they're a great program. So if you're interested in those, you can, you know, get those on my website. All my products, grooming apparel, books, DVDs, scissors, all my thinning shears are in stock right now, and they're all on sale. So you can save on my thinning shears. If you buy three, you get the fourth shear for free. So that's all available on my website.
Great, Jody. Thank you. And I want to put a reminder out to everyone before we close that Remember, in March 2016, every time you post a Groomer Talk, you are entered to win. For each and every post, you get one ticket in the drawing to win the brand new wall power grip. It's a corded, powerful, high-torque clipper. Should be exciting to see what this is about. But you'll win one for yourself, and you get to donate one to somebody in need. And that's starting March 1, runs through March 31st. And in 2 weeks from today, and let me get the exact date there, on Sunday, March 6th, we'll have Greg Doctor from Merrifield School here on the radio. If you want to email a question because you can't listen live, that's fine. We'll ask the questions for you. Greg should be very interesting, has a wonderful interest in all of this field and has a great school. So thank you, Jody. Have a fun season. I will be talking with you a little bit because of the judging with Rags to Riches, so I know I'll be talking with you too. But thanks for all you do. And
thanks, David.
Family too. Okay, Mackenzie.
I will. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for having me. Okay,
alrighty.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.